feeling oh so sorry, fighting back a flood of tears.
Hello, my fellow lake lover. Welcome to episode 23 of the Voices of the Lake podcast series, where we aim to inspire you and get you involved in awesome stewardship initiatives happening on and around Kootenai Lake. I'm your host, Joelle Burney, broadcasting from the shores of Kootenai Lake, the ancestral home of the Yakanuki Band of the Tanaha Nation. We also acknowledge the other Tanaha bands in addition to the Senaiks, Shwepnik, and Sioux First Nations who have territories and ancestral lands upstream and downstream of Kootenai Lake. You're listening to Stormy Weather by Loretta Davidson. Thanks so much for sharing, Loretta. Today's guest is Juliet Craig, the Program Director for the Kootenai Conservation Program, a partnership focused on private land conservation in the Kootenais. Juliet has a Master's of Science in Ethnobotany and is a registered professional biologist and professional agrologist. She works out of Nelson and has a broad range of conservation experience, including invasive plant management, bat conservation, species at-risk planning, and environmental education. This experience has allowed her to focus on the connections between people and the land and the important role of private landowner stewardship in conservation. I hope you're ready to learn lots and be inspired by this episode. Juliet is not only an incredible and passionate woman who has helped pave the way for so many awesome conservation initiatives in the Kootenais, but has so much knowledge around stewardship and the importance of collaborating and partnerships when it comes to tackling local environmental issues. In this episode, Juliet talks all about the Kootenai Conservation Program, different projects funded through this partnership, why this program is important, and more. We are so grateful for programs like KCP, and I can't wait for all of you to hear how awesome it is. So let's get to it. Hi, Juliet. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Joelle. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for coming on the Voices of the Lake podcast. We're really excited to have you and to learn more about the Kootenai Conservation Program, hear more about you and some of your experiences and your career, and also, yeah, learn more about KCP and some of the awesome initiatives that you have going on. I'm curious to know, what does a perfect day in the Kootenais look like for you?
I think for me, it involves being outside with my family, with my kids, and going hiking to somewhere beautiful, and then coming back to a nice dinner. That would be a perfect day for me.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. Yeah, definitely being outside. It's such a beautiful area that we live in. So spending time outside is really awesome. And I've been reading a lot about you before having you on the podcast, and you are a woman of many titles and one who has worn many hats over the years. Your experience and your knowledge is so inspiring. Can you maybe share a little overview of who you are and what you do?
Oh yeah, thank you. Well, I've always been interested in wildlife and animals ever since I can remember. I remember looking at insects in my yard and always been fascinated by animals. So when I went to university, there was no question I wanted to study biology. Mm-hmm. And particularly, I was interested in primates at the time. Oh. So I did a lot of interesting field projects on small mammals and snakes and bats around the province. And then one of my co-op jobs was in environmental education with BC Parks. And I realized how much I loved engaging the public with our amazing natural world. So I did quite a bit of work in environmental education over the years as well. And my master's is in ethnobotany, and I worked under the supervision of Dr. Richard Atlio, Chief Umiik of the Ahauset Nation, and Dr. Nancy Turner. And I lived in Ahauset traditional territory in Clackwit Sound and focused on sustainable plant management and sustainable forest practices, and really embodied the Hishuk Ich Sawak, which is everything is connected in New Channel language. And now I generally work on projects that focus on connecting people with nature and good stewardship of our land and waters.
Awesome. Wow. Yeah. And you've traveled a lot around too, right?
Quite a bit around the world. Yeah. I did some volunteer work in Borneo with Berute Galdikas at an orangutan camp for 4 months in university days. And that was amazing to be in the jungles with wild orangutans and watch how they behave and how similar they can be to humans and how different as well. And I also volunteered at a chimpanzee research camp in Uganda for 2 months. And being with wild chimpanzees was mind-blowing. They felt very similar, and looking eye to eye at some wild chimps was, I wondered who was studying whom in that process. One instance I remember was sitting on a path, and the one of the more dominant males was laying on his side with his hand on his head, lying on his elbow and just staring at me. Oh, and I was trying not to stare back, but I really thought, I'm being studied here. And this is just incredible.
Oh my goodness. So what brought you to the Kootenays then, back to Canada?
Well, I've always been based in Canada, but I had a co-op job through university, which I highly recommend, the co-op program, which helps place you in different working jobs in your studies. Mm-hmm. And it was with the Ministry of Forests at the time in the invasive plant program. And that's when I moved to Nelson for that job. And I did a double term there and really enjoyed the work. And the minute I got to the Kootenays, I knew this was my home.
Yeah, nice. And what are maybe some highlights from your career or some things that you are, most proud of?
I'm really proud of the people that I work with and the organizations coming together in a really collaborative way. So I helped start the Central Kootenay Invasive Plant Committee, which had very diverse perspectives. It's the Central Kootenay Invasive Species Society now. Mm-hmm. And just creating that environment to be aware of our differences, but also how we can work together. And that's also similar to the work with the Kootenay Conservation Program and bringing together the diverse perspectives of all sharing a common goal towards land stewardship. And another aspect, another creature I'm very fond of are bats. Mm-hmm. And I started the Kootenay Community Bat Project, which was working with landowners who had bats in their buildings and working on either avenues to try to exclude the bats from buildings or create situations where the bats could stay in the buildings. And that was so successful. It was a model that was used around the province. And now there's a BC Community Bat Program umbrella and many community bat programs around the province.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. Wow, you've done so much. It's so incredible to hear all of this. And I love how you're very passionate about, collaboration, especially between different organizations, because that's such an important thing to have when, dealing with environmental issues, because there are so many people and so many, factors in play. And so let's talk about the Kootenay Conservation Program. So you're the program director for this program. And for listeners who, don't exactly know what this program is, do you want to explain it?
Yes, the Kootenay Conservation Program is a partnership of 85 different organizations, Indigenous nations, stewardship societies, local, provincial, and federal governments, agricultural producers, all kinds of folks who care about conservation in the Kootenays. Mm-hmm. And our mandate is to coordinate and facilitate conservation efforts on private land and to generate the support and resources to maintain that effort. So the Kootenays is very mountainous, and most of our private land is found on valley bottoms. So in the Kootenays, only about 8% of our land base is private, but it has a disproportionate amount of really important habitats and places for plants and wildlife and other species. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, a third of the remaining cottonwood forest ecosystems are found on private lands in the Kootenays, and a quarter of remaining wetlands. So it's really important to steward our backyards, and where we want to live is where other wildlife wants to live as well. So we have to learn to maintain those habitats. And these valley bottoms are also really important for ecosystem connectivity, allowing the passage of large wildlife to move through, like grizzly bear or wolverine, from one large mountain area to another. They tend to move through these valley bottom private land habitats. And also for the pathways for climate change, as some of the species begin to migrate north, much of that may be happening through private land or valley bottom habitats.
Yeah, I actually had the privilege of being able to interview Michael Proctor last week, and he talked a lot about the Kootenai Connect program and the importance of corridors. So that was really cool. And I was like, oh my goodness, it's such a, you know, coincidence that I'm also interviewing Juliet next week, and this will tie together really well. So that's been, you know, really cool. And what exactly is KCP's, you know, vision for the Kootenays?
Our vision is to have landscapes in the Kootenays that sustain naturally functioning ecosystems that in turn support economic and social well-being. So we envision vibrant communities that demonstrate the principles of environmental stewardship for future generations.
Awesome. And do you think we can get there? Do you think we can accomplish that vision?
I'm very optimistic. I've tried to stay optimistic because it's easy to get overwhelmed by the negatives and the crises that our world is facing. But I've seen the dedication and passion of so many individuals and organizations that are truly trying to make a difference. And so I feel like we are all learning how to live more in balance. There's a lot of learnings from Indigenous nations on those relationships that we can learn from, as well as scientists like Dr. Michael Proctor and others. There's so many pieces we can draw on to form that vision.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's really interesting too, like just seeing, you know, programs like this even existing definitely gives me a lot of hope, and just being involved in different nonprofits and knowing that, you know, there's 85 other organizations that are all kind of in this partnership working or doing stewardship work to protect our environment. Like that's all very hopeful. And like you said, you know, you kind of have to stay optimistic. So, and it's good that work is being done. You know, we are always moving forward. So that's definitely really cool. Yeah, and like you said, you know, there's 85 other partner organizations involved in stewardship work. Can you share maybe one or two of your favorite examples of how the KCP has kind of brought these organizations together in a positive way?
Yes, I'll give a couple of examples. One is through conservation action forums. So we've described the Kootenays as having 14 conservation neighborhoods. So places like the Slocan Valley or the Lower Columbia or the Creston Valley that organizations and residents consider as their backyard and network and can really understand that landscape. And so we've hosted 8 conservation action forums to date where we bring together knowledge holders in that region, in that neighborhood, who have done research in that area or have other knowledge to share about that region. And then we identify what are the threats to this place, what are the targets or the really key species that we're trying to steward or habitats, and how do we work together to do that. So we ask these knowledge holders to provide 3 to 5 actions that would make the most difference moving forward that can be attained in the next few years. And then we select actions that are based on our own interests or mandates or what we're inspired to do. And that usually boils down to 4 or 5 actions. And then we have breakout tables that develop a mini action plan to move forward on those initiatives. And to date, the majority of those actions are either being worked on or have been completed.
Wow, that's amazing. And
they're under themes like ecosystem connectivity or protecting high quality habitats or restoring degraded habitats or improving climate resilience. Those types of themes are what our partners work on. So that's one example. Another example is Kootenai Connect, which I know Michael talked a lot about last week. And it's just an incredible project with so many partners doing work on the ground for species at risk in these biodiversity hotspots in our region that are so important as both corridors for grizzly bears as well as wetland habitats. And one final example is the Stewardship Solutions Toolkit, which is where many partner organizations have really great information for private landowners to be good stewards of their land, whether it's reducing wildlife conflict or managing invasive plants or incentives for farmers to steward habitats on their farms. And we've pulled all those together in one place called the Stewardship Solutions Toolkit, so that can be accessed online.
That is so cool. And yeah, so can anyone kind of participate, like any organization, I mean, or, you know, an individual who owns their own piece of land? Can anyone, like, what's the process of being part of KCP?
Well, the reason most people haven't heard of KCP is that we serve our partner organizations rather than individuals. Right. So we're a partnership of organizations or nations, stewardship societies, mm-hmm. other groups that represent a collective membership. Right. And so our mandate is to help them do the work. And you, as Focals, is one of them, to do the work that you do. So in order to become a partner organization, the organization needs to apply, and then our board reviews that application and determines if it's aligned with the vision and goals of KCP.
Right. Cool. Awesome. And Julia, why are having these programs like KCP in our community so important?
I think what KCP does is offer a collaborative approach and a network that many, many diverse organizations can work within, so that we are all doing complementary work to each other. Mm-hmm. We're not reinventing the wheel, but we're learning from each other. We're sharing best practices and the most up-to-date knowledge and science. And we're providing a framework that we all can make more impact. For example, the landscape level ecosystem connectivity framework of Kootenai Connect, that individual organizations doing projects in their region can know that their work is in a much larger context and having a much larger impact. Right. And another role of KCP is that we do have a mandate on private land, which right. most organizations don't. So mm-hmm. when our partnership formed 20 years ago, it was because people were seeing big changes happening to private land in 2002 in the East Kootenai. Mm-hmm. And they knew that these lands were so important for their habitats or their value as corridors or wetlands mm-hmm. or grasslands. Right. And so they felt that no single agency was responsible for that. So as working right. as a collaborative, we can address some of those issues.
Wow. That's so incredible. And you have a specific fund dedicated to supporting, you know, particular projects happening on and around Kootenai Lake, which Friends of Kootenai Lake is actually currently a part of. And we're so grateful for this fund. And that's the Kootenai Lake Local Conservation Fund. And I'm curious to know, how did this funding come about? You know, where did it originate? And where does the money come from to support those particular projects?
The local conservation funds are one of the biggest accomplishments of KCP over the years. So in 2002, when the partnership formed and they realized that there was so much more work to be done in private land stewardship and securement, mm-hmm. such as buying ecologically significant properties by land trusts or having them donated to land trusts to steward mm-hmm. in perpetuity for our grandchildren and their grandchildren, as well as organizations like Focals to do the good work that you do. Mm-hmm. What was required was more funding to support this work. So they our collaborative partnership put their heads together at that time and looked at models of how other regions were funding this type of work. And when they looked at the US, this model of having a tax-based revenue for conservation was being utilized quite a lot in the US, mm-hmm. but never before in Canada. Okay. So the East Kootenai Conservation Program, which is what we were called at the time, approached the regional district of East Kootenai and said, would you consider establishing a service, a tax-based revenue for conservation work? Mm-hmm. And so it went to referendum in 2008, where residents of the Columbia Valley voted whether or not to pay $20 per parcel per year mm-hmm. in this property tax into a fund for conservation. And it passed. And it was so new that they put a 10-year sunset clause on the service to say, we're going to have this expire in 2018. So if it doesn't work out or it isn't doing what we'd hoped it would do, we'll just use it as a trial. Right. But in 2016, the directors of the RDEK unanimously voted to remove the sunset clause altogether mm-hmm. and maintain this fund. Yeah. And so when our program expanded to the West Kootenai in 2012, we worked with the RDCK to look at this model and develop a dedicated fund for conservation in the West Kootenai. So electoral areas A, D, and E around Kootenai Lake went to referendum in 2014, and mm-hmm. residents voted yes to paying $15 per parcel per year towards this dedicated fund for conservation projects. Mm-hmm. And then organizations like yourself can then apply to the fund. Yeah. And KCP works in partnership with the local governments to help administer it. So we strike the technical review committee and have them review the project proposals. And we provide those recommendations to the directors of the fund, who ultimately decide which projects to support.
Right. Cool. And, you know, what kind of successful projects have been funded by the local conservation funds?
There's been so many amazing projects, and I welcome listeners to go to kootenayconservation.ca mm-hmm. and go to the local conservation fund tab to peruse mm-hmm. all the different projects. But one of them was Farmland Advantage, and that is an incentive program for farmers to take extraordinary measures to be good stewards of their farmland habitat. So mm-hmm. contracts are written with farmers to, for example, fence a wetland, and they receive money for that because of the mm-hmm. ecosystem service that they're providing to the community for clean water. Mm-hmm. And that started as a very small initial pilot idea in the Columbia Valley because of the local conservation fund mm-hmm. and now has become a provincial initiative.
Wow.
There have been amazing projects like Creek restoration project by the local Rod and Gun Club that allowed the first passage of salmon into this stream that anyone could remember in the generation of the project. Wetland and grassland restoration projects. There's an interesting project right now on bighorn sheep trying to reduce the spread of MOVI, which is a disease that is carried by domestic sheep and can transfer to wild bighorn sheep.
Oh, wow.
There's been lots of wildlife projects on species like swallows and bats and frogs and toads and water birds. And then this fund is also really important for land acquisition by land trusts like the Nature Conservancy of Canada or the Nature Trust of BC to acquire ecologically significant properties.
Mm-hmm. And under, you know, the Columbia Valley Local Conservation Fund in particular, how much land has been secured through that? Do you know?
Well, there's been four properties that have been secured by the Columbia Valley Fund. The Columbia Wetlands Edgewater property, which is 171 hectares, and Lot 48, which is 127 hectares. The Marion Creek Benchlands, which is 504 hectares.
Wow.
Those are some of the properties. But the Kootenay Lake or the West Kootenay Fund has also funded two property acquisitions. So there was a contribution made to Cottonwood Lake, which I'm sure listeners may be aware of,
yeah.
as well as Next Creek, which is the donut hole that was in the Darkwoods Conservation Area,
ooh.
Which is west of Creston, south of Nelson, mm-hmm. and a little bit east of Salmo. And that area was the largest conservation acquisition in Canada's history. And it was wow. missing a hole in the middle. And so the Nature Conservancy of Canada recently acquired that piece in the middle of it.
Oh, cool.
And the local conservation fund contributed to that.
That is so cool. And so the Kootenay Lake Local Conservation Fund has funded our Harrop Wetland Enhancement Project, which is, you know, increasing climate resilience in Western Toad Breeding Ground. You know, we are so, so grateful for this fund. But looking forward, you know, what are some other exciting projects that the local conservation funds are supporting?
One of them is a really innovative project to reduce conflict with grizzly bears, as Michael probably mm-hmm. talked about. And with the movement of grizzly bears through private land, there can be conflicts with landowners, particularly those with livestock or fruit trees. Mm-hmm. So this is a 50-50 cost share program that supports electric fencing so mm-hmm. that it reduces that conflict with grizzly bears. And that's done through Grizzly Bear Coexistence Solutions with Jillian Sanders. Mm-hmm. There's been a project to monitor aquatic invasive mussels, which if they come into Kootenay Lake could be extremely detrimental to our lake and our waters. There was a project on wildflowers for pollinators. So that was teaching and working with residents to create wildflower meadows that support native pollinators and pollinator pathways.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a project on water monitoring, looking at the quantity of water and how that may be shifting with climate change in the northern part of Kootenay Lake. Those are just a few examples.
Yeah, that's so exciting. And I'm excited to hear more about them and you know, how they how successful they are in the future. So that's really cool. Now you talked a little bit already about some of the referendums that have happened. And you know, you and I were chatting during a meeting when we met for the first time, and you mentioned that the RDCK electoral area F is looking at potentially establishing, you know, the same service, which is really exciting. And I know Area H, you know, went into referendum in October and it was passed. And, you know, for people who are kind of new to this process or have never really heard about a referendum or what a referendum is, can you maybe explain kind of the process and how people are able to get involved?
We are so, so delighted that the residents of the Slocan Valley voted in support of establishing the local conservation fund service in their area, mm-hmm. so that the current fund service area is expanded to include the Slocan Valley, which yeah. means these amazing projects can happen in the Slocan Valley through this funding as well. Mm-hmm. So it is a local government fund and a local government service. And so how it's established is has to have public assent, which mm-hmm. means it can go to referendum, or there's another process called the alternative approval process. Mm-hmm. But when it's a referendum, it goes on the ballot as its own separate question. Okay. And then electors, eligible electors, which is mm-hmm. sort of, you have to be 18 and over and be a resident of the area, and all those things that allow you to vote in BC. If you meet those criteria, then you can vote. And it's a yes or no question. Yes, you support this fund, or no, you don't. Worded in the language of the local government, which is that it's a bylaw being created to have this service of a dedicated conservation fund. So on October 15th, residents of the Slocan Valley voted to have this fund. Mm-hmm. And this, the area F is kind of a gap in the middle.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It includes the North Shore of Kootenay Lake and mm-hmm. Tagum and Beasley and Bonington. So they weren't included in the original referendum of areas A, D, and E in 2014. Yeah. So they'll be looking at bringing that service to the electors there sometime next spring. It hasn't actually officially started to have right. a referendum yet, but there's certainly been discussions of, and we certainly hear from residents of those areas that they want this fund and this service in their area as well. And they want to contribute to this larger picture. Right. And one of the greatest successes of the fund, I mean, there's all the on the ground work, which is amazing. And these projects, many of which wouldn't happen if there weren't this fund. Mm-hmm. But another big success is how much other funding gets leveraged into these projects.
Right.
So by the residents paying $15, it turns into $60 more on the ground. Four times that amount is leveraged
wow.
in kind support and additional dollars, because large funders like to see that there's local support for these projects mm-hmm. and that residents are actually committing their $15 a year to these projects. And so in the East Kootenay, which has had a longer fund service, residents have contributed $2.55 million into the service since it was established, mm-hmm. and that's leveraged an additional $22.6
million. Oh my
and that
goodness.
Money, I know, it's just incredible. It's just a good investment, a good return
yeah.
on investment. It supports local jobs. It supports contractors like heavy machinery or boat rental or all kinds of contractors, mm-hmm. materials and supplies that are bought at local hardware stores. People put gas in their trucks for the projects, like all those mm-hmm. reasons why there's some economic benefits to these funds as well.
Totally. And I love the map that's online that kind of outlines all the different electoral areas so you can see. And yeah, it was really neat seeing how like the area F was just that one little section that was, you know, missing. And then if that goes to referendum and everybody and it gets passed, then it's like pretty much all the areas around Kootenay Lake are involved in this program or support this program, which would be really, really cool. And for somebody who's maybe in this area and has the ability to vote, what would be your suggestions, or you know, why should someone vote for this?
Well, I think we live here because we care about where we live and
yeah.
we love where we live.
Yeah.
And whether you hunt or fish or hike or enjoy the view or go boating, mm-hmm. whatever your reason is, the land and water around us supports our quality of life. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the wildlife in our backyard, and we appreciate the clean water that we have to drink. And in all the market research surveys that we've done or had companies do of local residents, these are common themes of why people live here. Mm-hmm. So this fund helps support those values and that quality of life. And organizations like Focals, who is doing such amazing work that you do, mm-hmm. and the passion and dedication of the staff and the board of these nonprofits, it never ceases to amaze me, you know, mm-hmm. or retired folks who are part of a rod and gun club who spend their free time doing creek restoration or, you know, a whole host of different projects, monitoring water quality, all kinds of things that people do. So it does support that. And as I mentioned, it also brings funding into the economy, which we really need right now, and helps support these projects that translate to these economic benefits as well.
Yeah, I think that's such a good answer. And I like how you mentioned too, like, you know, no matter who you are, what you do, we're all connected to the natural spaces around us. And even if somebody doesn't have an appreciation for nature or wildlife or our lake, you know, the surrounding watershed and lake itself, you know, protects houses from flooding or filters people's groundwater, and provides all these different ecosystem services to our community as a whole. And so it's really just protecting your livelihood and your ability to live in this area, which is so important. So that's really cool. And yeah, hopefully it passes. And it sounds like a lot of people already are in favor of it. So
yeah, and it's been so successful that the community, the Kootenays is a showcase. It's the model of how this was developed. So we started with the Columbia Valley and then the Kootenay Lake area, and then the South Okanagan established a local conservation fund based on this model, the North Okanagan. And there's so many other local governments looking at this model that was born and bred here in the Kootenays. It was the ingenuity of people here who said, this just seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
And so they're looking at it in Ladner and Langley and Metro Van and Vancouver Island and all kinds of places. So it's I think the residents of the Kootenays should feel really proud that they've figured this out and established this model.
That is amazing. And yeah, so many like awesome projects and initiatives that are taking place and ways for people to collaborate and get involved and protect our local environment, especially with, you know, the pressures of climate change. It's just all such incredible work. And again, we are so grateful to be a part of the fund too, and stand along all the other awesome organizations taking part. Before we wrap up, Juliet, is there any other things that you want to mention? I know you mentioned, you know, your website for people to learn more about KCP. Are there any other, you know, upcoming events or initiatives on the go that people should be aware of?
We have a e-newsletter that we put out once a month. And if mm-hmm. people go to kootenayconservation.ca, they can subscribe to it. Mm-hmm. And it is packed every month with upcoming events or funding options or new resources or news from our partner organizations. It's just a fantastic way to find out what's going on in the region. We have a bit of a beast of a website because we are doing so much, but the Kootenay Connect information is absolutely mm-hmm. amazing. If people want to dig into some of the science and the scientific background of what's going on in the region for species at risk in these mm-hmm. corridors, that's a great tab to look at. There's the Stewardship Solutions Toolkit, so people can pick exactly where they live in the Kootenays, and the resources for them show up by the map of the conservation neighborhood. And then all that information about local conservation funds, if people, especially those in Area F, are considering mm-hmm. whether or not to support the fund, they can explore that website. And Areas C and G were also interested. Actually, most of the electoral areas in the RDCK were interested in the fund, and it's just our capacity to get the information out for the public assent process at this point. But ideally, one day the whole RDCK will have a local conservation fund service.
Woohoo! That's awesome. So exciting. Alrighty. Well, thank you so much, Juliet. Yeah, learning more about KCP and all the awesome work that's being done has been so inspiring and so hopeful. And yeah, a lot of really awesome information there. And I think our listeners will really appreciate this. And like you said, you know, maybe a lot of people don't actually know about KCP, but we're hoping that this podcast episode is shared amongst lots of people and gets the word out and encourages other, you know, landowners and other organizations to get involved. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of the Lake. Stay updated on what we've been up to. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Friends of Kootenai Lake. Read our blog posts at friendsofkootenailake.ca and sign up to our monthly e-newsletter. A huge thanks to our funders, Fortis BC and the Regional District of Central Kootenai, for helping us bring these stories to you. Again, you're listening to Stormy Weather by Loretta Davidson. Thanks again for sharing, Loretta.
Why can't all good things last? We made it through worse than that, I'm afraid.